Reading FC came within minutes of a very decent point at Burnley on Saturday and should have been given the chance to snatch all three, only for a woeful penalty decision that was followed by the cruelest of late winners from the hosts. Welcome to the Tarlesen Podcast, episode 314. Perhaps a bit of a somber mood today, but we'll try and pick it up. I'm Mark Mayer, your host. Joining me to talk about Burnley 2, Reading 1 is Harry Chafer of the Tarlesen, writing on the website. How is it going, Harry?
Yeah, all good, thank you. Well, all good as can be, given yesterday's result. But yeah, I'm sure we'll talk about it in more detail.
Yeah, hopefully not too bad a journey south from Burnley last night. It was just one of those where being in the away end must have been a peculiar experience. We're just talking off air, then coming back to kind of social media afterwards and realising exactly what had really happened.
Yeah, you know, like I said, in the heat of the moment, you think it's a penalty and you're frustrated. And then they go at the other end of the score. And it was just, you know, I've seen plenty of last minute losers, if you like, rather than winners in my time as a Reading fan. But yeah, it was a bit of a sucker punch. And then to go on Twitter afterwards and see the video that was circulating was made it even worse. But hey, that's football, I guess, isn't it?
Yeah, certainly is. Well, otherwise, there'll be plenty of positives we can get into in the recap in a second. We also have the mailbag coming up with your questions for the show. We have a pub chat this week. Louisa Sanguera from the Proud Royals group dropped by to talk about their work and new initiative, or new group that came up earlier this year. They founded and they're doing some work in that realm, which we'll be talking about later. And we'll also have big match preview for a couple of big games on the telly this week. So let's go into the recap then. Big thank you to our sponsors, ZCZ Films, and our Patreon subscribers. Let's do it then. Let's do Burnley 2, Reading 1.
Come rain or shine, it's time to relive the latest match action with the recap.
This podcast is sponsored by ZCZ Films, Reading's oldest ultras.
Well, we may as well start with the penalty then. It's not, no point beating around the bush, is it? And this was about the 91st, 92nd minute of the game. Tom Ince wins the ball back off Matson, comes into the edge of the area, and then Ian Matson, who's given the ball away, just kind of chops him from behind. I mean, let's start by giving the referee a bit of benefit of the doubt. What would make them think it wasn't a penalty? Do they think that maybe Tomic's kind of dived or went down too easily? Is there any evidence of that? Or did they just, perhaps this is a home team decision? If there were 20,000 people up behind him shouting for a penalty, maybe he gives it. I think those are the only two things that I can think kind of influence the decision.
Yeah, the only thing I can think of is the fact that it was us as the away team, you know, underdog. If it was at the other end of the pitch, would it have been given? I mean, I've got my bias hat on here, but I'll probably say it would be. There's nothing in there that could say that Ince went down easily. He's running directly towards goal in a great position to either get a strike off or at least win something, win a corner or cross it in. So there's no reason why he would go down, in my opinion. And then, yeah, like you said, Ince had won it back from Matson, which he'd done so often all game, as he'd done so often all season. And, you know, you see it time and time again that the player who loses the ball just has that little bit of frustration to try and get it back. And he's made a foul at the end of the day. I mean, Kompany said it himself. Everyone in the ground can see it's a penalty. But, yeah, maybe it's the fact that it was 800 Reading fans screaming for the penalty rather than 20,000 Burnley fans that's been the difference at the end of the day.
Yeah, I think that is the thing. And maybe I'm sure people think there's a bit of big team bias in there. I always struggle to actually see teams like Burnley as big teams, as Man United or Chelsea maybe, but perhaps with Burnley. I mean, Jeremy Simpson's the referee. I've had a little look into his kind of history because there are a few, I'm loath to kind of give these much credit or even a mention, but there are a few fan bases out there that think specific referees are out to get them. Jeremy Simpson, he's from Lancashire, came through that kind of non-league background and stuff. Amazingly, championship referees don't have kind of biographies of themselves from the Times newspaper or something that go into who they support. So I can't tell you that, but he's actually refereed Reading more than any other team 20 times in his career. Pretty much always been in the championship and lower leagues. He sent off Tyler Blackett away at Sheffield Wednesday and John O'Shea versus Hull both in 2018, some time ago. I can't particularly remember the O'Shea one, to be honest, but the Blackett one was a bit of a loose kick out.
Yeah.
Off the ball, wasn't it? Which I think, again, that was away at Sheffield Wednesday. As soon as that happens, can't really imagine the referee not giving that decision. He's actually given three penalties for Reading in the past, never given one against us, funnily enough. George Puskas's hat-trick at Wigan, one of those. And it was actually the first time he'd ever refereed Burnley, Harry, which I found a curious fact, probably because he's never been in the Premier League, though.
Yeah. I mean, Burnley have been in the Premier League for quite a while, haven't they? So that probably explains that. But yeah, in terms of, I side with you in terms of some fans thinking that particular referees are out to get them. I don't think it's a case of that. I mean, you've just said that he's given three penalties to us in the past, in 20 games. And I think it's just a matter of incompetence more than having something against Reading as a club. It's more to do with that. It was just a bad decision. And I mean, in senior and junior after the game have said about a handball before their first goal as well. I mean, I can't really remember that off the top of my head, if I'm honest, but probably because the one in the last minute has taken all the headlines. But yeah, I think it's more of a case of incompetence than bias. You just need to get that decision right. It's as simple as that. You know, we say refereeing's a hard job, which it is. I do not envy them one bit, but that's not a hard decision. You know, if it was a difficult decision, then yeah, you know, there'd be more benefit of the doubt, but it just wasn't a hard decision to make. It's an easy decision. And whether he's bottled it, like Ince has said after the game, or whether it's just he doesn't think it's a penalty, either way, it's not good enough.
No, certainly. Well, we'll talk a little bit more about the refereeing later on, because the mailbag, there's some questions on that. You'll be amazed to hear. But let's talk about the game, the first 90 minutes of the game itself. As expected, Reading kind of went in, sat in really, 29% possession, very similar to the Swansea performance we had a few weeks ago, but perhaps a bit better, a bit more on the front foot for that. There's quite a lot of shots the Reading fired off. Certainly weren't absolutely outdone in the stats with that regard. So, you know, it was 14-11, which isn't really that bad at all for an away performance. And the opening goal, long ball up front, Ince with the fine finish, shows the value of having maintained the team. You got that flick on that produced the opening. And in that 3-4-3, it was interesting that Reading had Long, Cow and Zhao on the bench. That's an embarrassment of riches at this level. And it wasn't a surprise that Reading turned up in that formation at all, was it?
No, I mean, the spot we've become used to, isn't it? We probably haven't had over 50% possession in any of our games this season so far. I mean, I haven't looked at the stats, but I wouldn't be surprised if that was the case. And especially against Burnley, who from the get-go, you've seen companies trying to play more of a possession-based style of football with them. And they play it well and they keep the ball well. But we're also become quite good at sitting in and soaking up pressure. It's exactly what we expected going into the game. You know, you would have been a bit of a fool if you thought that we'd go in and come away with 60% of possession and dominated the ball. But like you said, we converted what little possession we did have into decent opportunities, and we looked threatening on the break. You know, I didn't watch the entire Swansea game that you referred to there. I just watched the second half, funnily enough. We looked a lot more of a threat on Saturday. And, you know, on another day, we had bits of possession and bits of encouragement that, you know, we would have grabbed another goal and it'd be 2-0, and there's no way back then for Burnley. So, yeah, we played exactly how I thought we would play. And we were a threat, and I thought we fully deserved a point. Three may have been a bit unfair on Burnley, because like you said, they dominated the ball and got in better positions than us, and we had a few hairy moments defensively, but yeah, we thoroughly deserved a point. So it's a bit of a bitter feeling this morning.
Yeah, of course. Well, it was, as you said, it was a very good equaliser from Manuel Benson, one of the Belgian players that Vincent Kompany's taken with him for this season, having taken over at Turf Moor. So sometimes you have to hold your hands up and say that's a good finish. As for the winner, I mean, I'm not going to start naming names or getting too much into it. Is it a goal that we're really unhappy to concede in the manner of how it came about? Ball into the box, kind of, you know, the man at the far post gets there. Was it, do you consider it a good goal from a Burnley point of view?
I mean, as a defensive team, you always look at what you could have done better for every goal, even if it's a, you know, 35-yard screamer into the top corner, you're thinking, should we have closed them down a bit more? But, you know, I haven't watched the highlights back in full. I sort of refused to at the minute. But in the moment, I thought that there could have been more to stop the cross. And then, you know, for it to make its way, it's a bit of a tame cross as well, from what I remember. It wasn't, you know, fizzed in with any real power or threat. So for it to make its way all the way to the back stick, and then, you know, I can't remember if it was Hoylett or Yeardom at the back post, but we've done really well at defending the back post all game, I thought, apart from a header in the first half, which should have been buried by Connor Roberts. But, you know, there have been a few moments where we've done well to clear it out of the back stick and relieve a bit of pressure. So for it to happen like that was, I mean, it was more the manner of the whole goal rather than the goal itself, if that makes sense. But yeah, you know, there will be moments that Ince will be ruined a bit when he reflects properly on the game as a whole today. You know, just maybe a lapse of concentration at the back post that's been our undoing.
Yeah, well, Reading, it's also worth, we'll round off the recap in a second and go on to the mailbag, but it's also worth reflecting that Reading also had to play most of the game without Tom McIntyre, who took a ball to the face and went off with what Paul Ince described as a chronic migraine, and he should be back for Tuesday. But that meant that we had Yeardom and Bengay in the back three with Hoylett as the right wing back, and Reading continuing to having to kind of make do and mend at points and actually not doing too bad at it.
Yeah, I think that's been lost in the whole drama of yesterday a bit, that Mbenge at left centre-back for 60-odd minutes. I mean, he's still very raw, you can tell. I mean, two foul throws speaks for itself. But, you know, he jumped in and dived in a few times when, you know, a more experienced player probably wouldn't have done. But you can see as a player in there, and for him to move from right wing-back to left centre-back, it doesn't sound like a huge shift, but it is, and it's completely different responsibilities. It would have been easy for instance to maybe move Babber to left centre back and Hoylett to left wing back, but, you know, he trusted Mbenge to do a job at centre back, which I think he did. And I think in the second half we were a lot more sure at the back, which is ironic considering that's when we conceded the two goals. But yeah, it's a shame to lose McIntyre, because obviously he's grown and developed quite a lot this season and made that left centre-back spot his own. But hopefully he'll be back in time for Tuesday. But yeah, I think we did a really good job, and it's good to have Yeardom back. He bailed some of his teammates out on a couple of occasions, and, you know, has sort of made that right centre-back position his own as well. Holmes, I thought, played well. Mbenge played well. Babaraman, I thought, showed signs of quality as well when we needed it, just to relieve a bit of pressure. So yeah, there's definitely promising signs. I mean, when Ince looks at it, the game today or tomorrow, whenever he does, and looks at it as a whole 90 minutes, he'll be impressed. Like he said, he was proud of the performance, but we shouldn't let that one decision sort of mar a good performance for 93, 94 minutes.
Yeah, for sure. Well, let's hear from Paul Ince now, and then we'll go into the mailbag, where we have a few questions on a certain penalty incident.
Well, it was a poxy performance from the referee, and that's what's cost us the 3 points, ultimately. And we've had two blatant penalties. Listen, I know referees have got our tough jobs, but the handball from Brownhill was a blatant penalty. Once they get back to 1-1, Tom Scholes in the box, he gets tripped over by Matteson, the referee's there. I've watched it time and time again. That the AR's there in a view where he's got to give it. You know, it's a blatant penalty. You won't get more blatant penalty. And they bottle it, absolutely bottled it. You know, they'd probably go home and have, you know, chicken and chips and watch Match of the Day. Well, we've got to go 4 hours thinking, why the referee's not making the right decision.
Keep up to date with all things Reading FC. Follow The Tilehurst End on Facebook and Twitter.
Starting us off then, Adrian Savory asking, what company does the ref work for? Company with a K, I should point out. NCC Dakota said, what's the ref's address? Which I don't have an answer for, but the Tyler sent editor Simeon Pickup did reply to you saying, super Burnley fan at lanx.co.uk, which I think is fitting. And Mike Stagg saying, surely now it's time for all clubs to send a letter of complaint to the EFL and the FA about the standard of officiating in the Football League. Now, this is an interesting point. I mean, Burnley aren't going to be sending this letter, are they? Let's face it. So the company did say that he's felt like they've had bad decisions go against them this year. Everyone does. Even, you know, with perfect robotic referees, you still have subjective decisions that people disagree on, basically. So I guess the thing is for us to work out now is, what do we think that the Championship should be doing? Obviously, we all want the officiating to be better. I think generally this season, we haven't been involved in loads of decisions like this. I'm struggling to think of any game or many game-changing decisions. There was that one at Sheffield Wednesday a couple of years ago where we had about three Stonewall penalties turned down, didn't we? And we've not had many games like that at all. So do you think that VAR is the answer? Do you think that we should be looking for that? Because ultimately, that's kind of really the only thing we can do, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, VAR's as controversial as anything in football these days, isn't it? But yeah, I think because football's such a sport that swings so much on emotion. I mean, like you said, Burnley fans are going to be saying the complete opposite to what we're saying this morning. And, you know, it should be a battle that we all fight together as fans and as clubs, that the officiator needs to improve. I mean, undoubtedly, if we had VAR, then we'd certainly get a penalty. We'd more than likely win the game 2-1. So that may come into the question. But also, if we had better referees, then it'd be the same scenario. We would have won 2-1 with the penalty. So, yeah, I think it's more of a case of a systemic change within the EFL. I mean, the standard of refereeing is pretty awful, and it's not even the big decisions. I mean, like you said, that game back at Sheffield Wednesday, which I mean, still probably have nightmares about to this day, which was ridiculous. But we don't have many games like that where, you know, it's poor decisions or like a big decision that the game's hinged on. It's more just little decisions like throw-ins, corners, free kicks, which can all have a massive effect on a game. That they're just getting wrong every single time. I mean, I remember the Jeff Hendrick one earlier in the season against West Brom. I mean, Jeff Hendrick should do better on the ball, and he's lost the ball in a dangerous area. But, you know, 9 times out of 10, anywhere else on the pitch, it's a foul. And, you know, you get on with the game, and there's no complaint from West Brom players if that is given as a foul. So, yeah, it's just more of a systemic change that needs to be made within EFL, which obviously doesn't happen overnight. So maybe we're stuck with this batch for a while yet.
Yeah, I think the argument for VAR is that there's so much money in the game, and let's face it, in the Championship as well, not quite to the extent of the Premier League, but there is obviously getting promoted to the Premier League, which Burnley may do now as a result of this 2 points that they've been given from the decision, that there is enough money to justify it, I think. Even if Championship clubs are losing money, there's certainly enough money banded around in the game in general to kind of, you know, funnel it if we want to ring fence it and that stuff like that. Problem is with VAR for me is that as a fan, it's still crap fundamentally, because you still sit there in the stadium. Obviously, Reading fans, we haven't really had this, but the few times I've been to a VAR game, you still sit there in stadium, watch 40 seconds of football, then it goes out for a throw, and then something stops and the screen says VAR. And then for an incident that quite often you'd have missed or, you know, disagreed with, a penalty gets given, or even worse, a goal gets cancelled for a narrow offside that in the stadium you don't know anything about, particularly for, you know, the exactitudes of why it's not given. So it's difficult. And I think what I think we're talking about here, and what you're talking about with the kind of systemic change, is that the difference between the Premier League and the Championship referees is almost one of control. Premier League referees, even when it's United versus, like, you know, Norwich or whoever, they manage to control the game, and they don't let the Man United players get on top of them and they don't keep giving them all the 50-50s. Whereas in the Championship, you see it time and time again where one team has the referee in their back pocket and they keep getting all these little decisions, particularly if they're winning, like home or whatever. And for me, that's the thing that really, you know, that doesn't necessarily solve the Tom Ince thing. I think fundamentally that's just a home team decision. But that control is where I kind of find that it really struggles in this league.
Yeah, 100%. You know, I think it was the same on Saturday, really, especially in that one decision. Like you said, you've got 20,000 fans who, I mean, the atmosphere was electric yesterday, especially when Burnley got the winner, as you can imagine. So, yeah, it, like I said, a bit of control, and, you know, referees tend to lose control of games at this standard, at this level, which is sort of unforgivable, really. I mean, it used to be notorious, didn't it, in the old Premier League days with Man United and Alex Ferguson sort of getting hold of referees and Old Trafford being a place where United got decisions more often than not. And like you said, I think that sort of dialed down a bit in the Premier League, but we still see it in the Championship, of teams just sort of, yeah, like you said, getting a referee in their back pocket and then, you know, that's it for the game. But fundamentally, that doesn't explain just bad decisions, which, I mean, yeah, it's just frustrating, really frustrating. And then going back to the VAR argument, you know, yeah, theoretically it should explain decisions and get to the right decision, but it's still the same people using VAR as it is on the pitch. So I don't think VAR in terms of a spectacle, like you said, is pretty awful. And one of the reasons, or the main reason why we all love football is the emotion of it and celebrating goals. And I could not think of a worse feeling than celebrating a last minute winner and then VAR ruling it out for someone's left toe being offside. So, you know, for that reason alone, I'm probably quite happy we're in the Championship. And, you know, at least you know that every goal that goes in, you can celebrate. So, yeah, I'm not a huge fan of VAR myself, so I wouldn't really like to see it in the Championship, which is ironic because with it, we probably have won 2-1 yesterday. So, yeah, I think it's just one of those where you, like you said, there's enough money in the game, in the Championship as well, to get it in. But I personally wouldn't want to see it. So, yeah.
Yeah, well, there's certainly the Tottenham fans. If any listen to this podcast, any Reading/Tottenham fans will certainly be able to tell you about the problem of having a last minute winner ruled out as we had last midweek in the Champions League. The only thing that I thought of as you were talking then about Ferguson and stuff and how the Premier League has genuinely improved on that front is the horrible trip that we had to Old Trafford in 2013 when I think Mariappa was bundled over in the box 10 minutes to go. And Ashley Young was at his peak Ashley Youngness of falling over and winning fouls. And it's not good, but I think the Premier League has probably solved that issue. And hopefully now the Championship, I mean, I don't think it will get better, but that's the hope, isn't it? That those sort of things will be stopped.
Yeah, hopefully. I mean, that 2013 season, I think it was Fergie's last, wasn't it, at Man United. So
yeah,
I might explain that. But that's a good little reminder, actually. I remember that Mariappa being shoved in the back last minute. But hopefully that sort of gets stamped out within the Championship, because it's an obvious problem, I think. And like I was saying earlier, because it's a game full of emotions, like Burnley fans this morning aren't going to be feeling what we're feeling. So it's really hard to get on the same page in terms of trying to make a change with the refereeing standards, because, you know, I mean, if it's the shoe is on the other foot, we probably wouldn't be having this conversation now about Burnley getting denied a Stonewall penalty in the last minute. So because when it benefits one team, it goes completely against another. It's hard to get fan bases on the same page, but hopefully we'll manage to do that sooner rather than later.
Certainly. Well, let's go then into the pub chat and talk about something completely different, because we have Proud Royals coming on to introduce themselves to Reading fans. You may not have heard of the group Pub Chat with Proud Royals, then we'll be back with Big Match Preview.
For all the latest Reading news, analysis and opinion, visit the website at thetilehurstend.com.
Welcome to the Pub Chat segment of the show this week. I'm delighted to be joined by Louisa Sanguera of Proud Royals, the secretary of the Proud Royals, which is a group that was formed earlier this year to kind of raise awareness and bring into light, really, the representation of Reading fans from an LGBTQ plus background, and even those who maybe aren't of that background who want to get involved and raise awareness. And I suppose there's no better person to kind of explain what Proud Royals is than Louisa. So I'll let you take it away.
Thank you so much, and thank you for inviting me on. So, yeah, Proud Royals are a Reading Football Club fan group, and we're advocating and promoting for inclusivity and acceptance within our fan base and within fans for Reading Football Club. So although we promote and advocate mainly for LGBTQ plus groups, it's always, you know, really important to recognise the other diverse groups and other minorities as well that we might have as part of our fan base too, and promote acceptance and awareness of those groups.
And this weekend as well, I think for Reading as well, this was last weekend, but the Rainbow Laces campaign has been going on over the last couple of weeks. For fans who maybe see these sorts of things and kind of acknowledge them, but maybe aren't so sure about what they're about, what would you say they're about, and kind of what they do for Proud Royals as well?
Yeah, so the Rainbow Laces campaign is something that's organised by the Stonewall charity, and it's promoting equality and diversity within football, particularly LGBTQ+. And so on those days, you will have seen the rainbow flags were around there. The stewards were also wearing their rainbow armbands, which isn't something that just happens on those games now. Proud Royals have made that happen now regularly with an LGBTQ plus liaison steward available at all Reading games, which is fantastic. Reading's actually the first club to do that, and other clubs are now following suit with that. So, yeah.
Yeah, that's one of the questions I had, is obviously you're a Reading fan, needless to say, for this podcast, and also for the atmosphere and everything that you found at Reading games. Obviously, we have, you know, the Eamon Dolan family stands and all these sorts of things now, and what you're talking about there. So how have you found in your time watching Reading from all these perspectives, as you say, like the LGBTQ plus, from the minorities and as a woman as well? How have you found it? The atmosphere has kind of changed, whether it's improved and stuff over the time that you've been going to football.
Yeah, I mean, so just to sort of be clear about my background and where I'm coming from, because I wouldn't want to be the voice of something that I don't represent personally. So I personally identify as straight, but I am female. I identify, you know, I'm single, and I am from a mixed race background. I'm, you know, mixed Indian and white British heritage. So I kind of do see myself very much in a minority in terms of attending games like that. And I, you know, I definitely notice it. I don't feel that there are a huge amount of people like me perhaps attending games, and who are perhaps kind of seen and kind of, you know, I wouldn't go far as to say that not accepted, but certainly not kind of represented so much as perhaps the fan base actually is. And I've had conversations with people around how, you know, when you're looking at the players on the pitch and when you look at Reading as a place, it's incredibly diverse. But actually, when you look at the fans around the stadium, it doesn't represent that.
Yeah, so what sort of feedback have you been getting from the club and from the fans since Proud Royals has become a thing then?
I mean, I think that has certainly been acknowledged, which is a really good thing. It's certainly not being swept under the carpet, but I certainly feel that people don't perhaps know the best way to promote that kind of thing without perhaps making other people feel alienated. Because the thing is, with groups like this, you don't sort of want to alienate yourselves as a fan group. You want to be able to mix and liaise with all of the other fan groups who are there. You want to be promoting a feeling of community. You don't want to kind of segregate yourselves, because that's going totally against the objective. And it has been fantastic. We've had a lot of interest from other fan groups, from local charities, local businesses, all sort of wanting to support and help us to raise awareness. We've got events sort of planned in future coming up with other charities and partners that we've got recently. So it's looking really bright for the future, but still very much in its early stages, I would say.
Yeah, certainly. And how would you say for people to get involved in Proud Roars if they're listening to this? And like you say, they're certainly a group that accepts anyone from any backgrounds, whether you're listening to this as a white straight male thinking maybe I'm not involved in these sorts of things, but you totally still can.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, the focus for us at the moment really is just promoting ourselves, raising awareness of ourselves and gaining members. Because until we've got sort of a big group of people together, there's only so much that we can do. So at the moment, it's really if people can follow us on social media, we're on Twitter, we're on Instagram, and you can find us very easily there. Events and things like that. There's the Rainbow Laces game, the Rainbow Royals games that happen as well at the stadium, which you can find out all about on social media, having a look on our website, and just promoting us and getting involved that way, really. And then in the future, we're starting to think about building membership and organising membership benefits and things like that for next season. So it's important not to kind of grow too quickly, to do it steadily and to do it the proper way.
Yeah, and from a kind of broader perspective as well, my final question for you will be, how do you see the kind of game developing over the next few years in terms of having a more diverse kind of, I guess, fan base as well, as you said about as well, having a more, not necessarily that it's not accepting at the moment, but feeling perhaps a bit more comfortable in your skin as to being around games and everything like that. How do you see the game developing in that sense? Because we are seeing, not that this is particularly relevant to diversity, but we're seeing more kind of crowd trouble incidents kind of coming back at the moment that maybe wouldn't encourage people from other backgrounds and stuff to get involved. How do you see that kind of panning out and what you'd ideally see for the next few years?
I think it's having conversations with people, sort of, you know, not just our members, but with as many people that attend games as possible, really, and kind of finding out a bit more about where they're all coming from. Because, you know, we do get sometimes comments from people saying that they don't care, they're not interested. And I think it's really important that when we hear those things, we ask why and we find out where those kinds of responses are coming from. Because, you know, we're a group who are just trying to promote respect, acceptance. Why would people not want that? Why would people perhaps be against that? I think it's important for us to get to the bottom of those kinds of things. And then just making people aware that, you know, there are all kinds of people that attend games. Perhaps you don't just see that. But I think when people know that there are people who identify similar to them or are more like them attending, they feel safer and more comfortable to go themselves.
Yeah, certainly. Well, I think for anyone who wants to find out more, there's always the Proud Royals on Twitter, and you can get involved in that. Certainly drop a message and get involved in the group if you want. Well, Louise, it's been great to have you on. Hopefully we'll be hearing more from you in the next few months and years as Proud Royals begins to establish itself as a force around Reading.
That would be great. Yeah, thank you so much for having me, Mark. It's been brilliant. Thank you.
Be loud and be proud and back the boys and make some noise. Come on, you Rs!
Shout out to this week's podcast sponsor, ZCZ Films, showing that age is no barrier to being a hooly hoop.
So, right, so let's talk about some games this week then. And Reading are in action twice during midweek. We have Luton away on Tuesday, then Preston at home on Friday night, which is a Sky kickoff 8 p.m. But Luton first up, and a team that Reading are level on points with, who drew 1-1 with Sunderland on the weekend. They're very, I mean, I feel like I say this most weeks, but very Championship Luton. Proper, you know, it's 4 defeats out of 17. They draw a lot of games, unlike Reading, who've only had one draw this season, but they're level on points, better goal difference than us. Carlton Morris, the big threat up front. They play a 3-4-3, quite quick strikers to get balls into the box. And at Kenilworth Road, they always have that ability to just kind of, you know, get the atmosphere behind them and perhaps drag teams down a little bit. Not saying they've got low quality there in the playoffs last year, but you know what I mean? It's to just kind of bring the game to a level that they operate at that is a bit scrappy and that they excel in. Now, I guess the question for us, Harry, is would Reading actually prefer that? Do Reading actually kind of want to go to Luton on Tuesday night and have a bit of a dogfight? And I think, given what we've said about how Reading goes to teams and sit in and all this sort of stuff, I think that probably will suit us.
Yeah, especially after Saturday, I think, you know, in times gone by, I think this team or Reading teams in the past coming off a decision like we did on Saturday probably sink into their shell a bit and, you know, and gone a bit of a downer. But I think this team's got a bit more about them and I think they'll want a scrap and they'll want a bit of a fight. And Ince will want it, both Inces. And yeah, I think it could play into our hands. I mean, like you said, Luton are a proper championship team and a bit of an underdog within the division. I mean, getting to the playoff semi-finals last season, of course. Nathan Jones is a good manager and they've got decent players and a way of playing that causes teams problems. But yeah, I think if we might quite fancy a game of just going toe-to-toe with someone and seeing, all right, if you're gonna scrap, we'll scrap a little bit harder and see where it gets us. Because, you know, we've had a few dogfights so far this season that we've come out on top of. I mean, if you look at the games that we've lost, barring probably Rotherham at the start of the season, they're games that, you know, probably would have expected to lose at the start of the season. So teams with, you know, more quality than us at the end of the day, and Premier League players in all over their squads. So yeah, I'm looking forward to Tuesday. I think it'll be a good proper championship feisty match. And yeah, I'm optimistic about coming off with a good result.
Yeah, let's have a quick word for Preston then with the Friday night. This is the next show. Tarlis and Podcast will be back after that. So Preston, the joint best defence in the league and the joint worst attack. So a team that pretty unique, really, and I don't really know what to expect, to be honest. They are also level on points with Reading. All the teams that are on 25 points, Luton, Preston and Reading, facing off this week. So I just don't know whether... I guess it depends on Luton and how Reading turn up for that. But for Preston, it's a bit of a wild card game because you don't tend to face these teams that are... I don't think they score few goals because... you know, they don't try. I think it's more perhaps that their finishing and stuff isn't particularly great. But
yeah.
Reading, I don't know whether this would suit us or not.
Yeah, I mean, they are a bit of an anomaly, aren't they, Preston, so far this season? You know, remind me a little bit of our start under Pavlovic. I mean, I know we scored more goals, but, you know, keeping that those clean sheets and a good solid defence as your sort of platform for a decent start to the season. So it is an odd one. I mean, they beat Middlesbrough at the weekend, which is a good result for them. So yeah, but I'm optimistic when we play at home. I mean, we've got one of the best home records in the division, and you know, we've come up against some potential banana skins, if you like. Huddersfield, Bristol City, you know, these games that, you know, in the past we sort of lost 1-0 or 2-0 or, you know, failed to get a result. And we're winning those games this season, which we need to do. So again, optimistic and confident. I mean, 3 games in 6 days again. I mean, if Jurgen Klopp managed in the Championship, he'd have a bit of a heart attack, I think. But especially with our depleted squad, it's going to be difficult. But, you know, optimistic and confident because the team 9 times out of 10 this season have showed that they'll put up a fight and they'll put performance in. There's not many times I've left a game this season and thought, oh, they didn't try hard enough today. So I'm confident. But like you said, it'll be a bit of an odd game, that Preston one. But 3 points are there if we want it.
Certainly. Well, let's talk predictions then to finish off the show. The Prediction League update. Everyone but Ben Thomas got a Burnley defeat. Nobody predicted 2-1, though. So Ben, who was top of the Prediction League this year, his lead has been cut to a single point with Handbags second, Sims third, and I'm fourth with the others not too far behind at this stage. So I'm going to say for the Luton game, a 2-0 Reading win. I think this is a game that Reading... are really going to be up for. They're all obviously terribly annoyed about the Burnley defeat. If we'd have not got the penalty and then drawn, maybe not as much, but I think the fact that we lost it in the end really will rally the troops and pull in. So hopefully we can recover quickly enough and the legs aren't too sore, but there's actually quite a lot of quality on the bench. You know, Fauna, Carroll, Zhao, wouldn't be surprised to see those guys start. But a bit of a scrap, I think Reading will be right up for it. Harry, what do you think for this game?
Yeah, I'm going to go for a Reading win as well. I think 1-0 to Reading. Like you said, I think they'll be fired up for it. And yeah, I think they'll get the 3 points. Like I said, in times gone by, probably would have gone for a loss. But this team are made of sterner stuff. So yeah, 1-0 win for me.
Awesome. Well, thank you very much, Harry, for popping onto the show this week. Bit of a late notice call up to talk about a defeat, but always happy to have you on.
No problem at all. It's been great talking to you, Mark.
And thanks, everyone, for tuning in. We will be back, as I say, after the Preston game, probably about Sunday morning. We'll be doing that podcast, depending on our circumstances, really. But we'll be tuning in both these games on Sky, of course, Luton away and Preston at home, 7:45pm kickoff at Kenilworth Road and 8pm as per usual in Berkshire. So hopefully Reading can bounce back from being burned and soothe our championship status with a good win on Tuesday and even then on Friday as well. Thank you for listening. Come on, you ass.
You smile. Funny how the crumbs always leave a trail, even when it's